and welcome to the Retro
definitely
Asylum.
Definitely add this one as well.
Yes, that's good, Chris. The UK's number one retro gaming podcast show, and Chris
an
is
outtake,
trying to,
you know,
to
right at the start,
put me off my game here, but it's not working. It's not working at all, mate. We are about to record a wonderful episode, I hope, about a game that I love very much, Day of the Tentacle, that we've been playing in the Game Club. So with me, as always, of course, I have Chris, the annoying little brat that was trying to put me off my game here. Say hello, Chris.
I did put you off the game. I didn't try. I did put you off.
You succeeded, mate. You succeeded. How are you?
I did. I'm still in. This is still part of the interruption. When are we starting?
No, we've started.
Oh, are we going? You're going to leave all this in? Mm. Oh, I'm going to leave. Use it. Whoever is going to leave all this in. Yeah. I'm all right, mate. How are you?
I'm fine. Been enjoying this month. It's been great playing through Day of the Tentacle again.
Oh, I thought you were talking about WHB.
This month. Well, actually, I didn't want to mention it already, but I definitely win this month, Chris. Man,
no,
do
you
I
don't.
Win.
The winner is the one who savors the game and takes their time.
No. So, yes, listeners, I already finished WHB, which John V tells us is actually... The game's title is actually just a reference to Riz. It's a Welsh hairy bastard. So that's most definitely what I will be calling it from now on.
That completely just sums up our Discord community, that, doesn't it?
It does.
People just slazing in a very friendly and completely funny way. Mm. Somebody else. Brilliant. Love
I think
that.
John was actually a bit more polite. He said it was Welsh hairy bloke, but Riz himself said that, the B could be something else.
Quite a few have finished it already.
Yeah, two or three people already, right? Hmm.
But there's a sequel to it, you
yes,
say?
Yes, X equals Y equals Z is the sequel, right. I think.
Yeah.
So this is
more of the same?
It's called W star H star B. And the next one just uses equals instead, XYZ. Set.
And it's more of the same?
I don't know. I haven't played it yet, but it looks like an evolution of that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm enjoying it. Yeah, I think I'm level 15 was where I turned off yesterday.
That's a tough one. And I remember that one.
I find it difficult. It's hard, isn't it? Mm,
yeah.
But good though. I'm really enjoying it.
It's good fun. And it a good trick, actually, if you want to get through these levels, the harder levels, You especially, I think it was level 15, it finally clicked for me, especially the really hard levels where you have narrow paths you can get through, yeah. And there's only really one or two ways of doing it.
Yeah.
Look at the exit instead. Stop looking at where you think you're going to be going, but look at the exit and go backwards and see how could I actually get there. And yeah.
Yeah, I'm starting to kind of make those little mental leaps myself. Mm. In terms of thinking, right, well, if I need to land on that square, I'm going to need to be in elongated form there.
Yes.
And you need at least three clear squares, don't you, to lie flat. So,
yep.
So, I am starting to kind of go through all these things. It's really good. Really good.
But this episode, of course, is not about WHB. So, let's keep our powder dry for the next recording, right?
Yes.
Actually, we weren't even supposed to tell people yet that WHB won the vote. That's part of our plan for later on. So people, you didn't hear this. You didn't hear this at all. We don't know who won
yet,
but we've been
later.
Voting on some exciting Speccy games.
We'll have to reveal later.
Yes.
Big grand reveal.
Yes.
So how have you been, mate? What have you been up to?
What have I been up to? I have been up to playing even more games for the... finish him episode that will be recorded at some point in time. It's proving to be a bit tricky to align four calendars of four grown men, but it's up for recording next week now, so let's see if that happens. But I've actually, spoiler here, I've actually finished both of my games, or almost actually. We get into on the episode why it's only almost for one of the games.
Yeah, I've decided I'm going to spend the next couple of weeks until we do record having a go at Jumpman Jr.
Yeah.
Oh. Because my game's rubbish.
I love Jumpman Jr. So your game was Final Fight, right?
Yeah, and...
can we play it online? Because I used to love Final Fight as a two-player game in the arcade.
Yeah, just don't try and finish it, because if you do, you'll completely ruin it for yourself, like I've done.
So I'd always play games, arcade games, using only one credit, mainly because I was cheap. So I wanted as much playing time out of an arcade as possible, arcade game. So I'd put in one quarter and play until I died, and then wait for it to reset and then start over. So I've played the first three levels, I'd like to think, of Final Fight many, many times, but I've never seen the rest, I think.
You don't need to.
Okay.
To be honest. And we've been saying for years now that as retro gamers with access to pretty much every game ever made ever in the history of mankind, that the way to play arcade games is treat it as if every time you hit F5 or whatever your button is to add another credit, treat it like that is costing you a pound.
Mm.
Because these games really aren't meant to be played with infinite credits.
No.
So you can just spam in one session.
Yep.
And that's the way I've been playing Final Fight, and it is the definition of tedium.
Mm. Yep.
To be honest, I'll unpack it a bit more on the finishing episode, but I've decided now, having seen 90% of it and having watched the credits on YouTube, I'm actually going to play a good game.
Yeah.
And I'm going to spend a little bit of time with Hero, but Jumpman Jr. looks so far up my alley.
It's good.
That is the game I think I'm going to spend a bit of time with over the next couple of weeks.
It's definitely a game you need to play with save states, otherwise you'll lose your sanity. So don't save state mid-level. That'll destroy the game for you. But just save state at the beginning of each level, because...
No passcodes or anything for Jumpman Jr.? No.
It would have taken me... But again, we'll get into that on the episode. It would have taken me months, or maybe 6 months, maybe a half a year, to get through that game if I didn't save state before each level and then train how you actually get through these, because there's so much... I mean, this game makes Rick Dangerous look like a walk in the park sometimes.
So. That is the thing with these older games. And Day of the Tentacle, this is a bit of relevance to that as well, about how they sustain a premium price point for a game that you could probably get through in an hour and a half if you know exactly what you're doing.
Mm.
We can come back to that with Day of the Tentacle. But I suppose in the older days, you know, we're just playing Final Fantasy at the moment for the community playthrough. I've not actually started it yet. But that's another game where there's quite a lot of padding, and you just have to accept that in these older games, that's the way they were made.
Mm.
Yeah, they had to justify the price point. They couldn't fill it with bags of narrative, so you just end up with a lot of padding, really.
I actually really disagree about Day of the Tentacle doing that, but we'll get into that later on. Yeah. A lot of other games, I mean, Monkey Island 2, for example, does it.
Oh, I don't think it's padded. I don't think Day of the Tentacle, I think there's a little bit of padding, but I don't think there's a lot. I mean, in terms of you're wandering around having to figure out the puzzles.
Mm.
Once you know the puzzles, you can get through it.
Sure.
Like most adventures, you know, you can blitz through it in an hour and a half or so.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. The game is figuring out the puzzles, isn't it? Not going through the story.
Yeah, more or less, I guess.
Yeah.
So let's get into the news before we get into the Day of the Tentacle proper.
You haven't asked me what I've been up to.
I have. I actually did, but you just told me a little bit. Listeners, please go on to Discord. Tell him. I did actually tell him, ask him what he was up to. Chris, what have you been up to?
I need your advice, actually.
You do?
Because I've decided I'm going to go down the free MC boot route for my PS2 because I've had it. I mean, I've got a model PS2. The drive is playing up a little bit.
Mm, yeah.
So I'm struggling to read the backups of all the games I own, which I'm keeping away in the loft because I want to take care of them.
Oh, yes.
I want to have a look at Killzone by Guerrilla because we've been playing Horizon Zero Dawn over on playthrough. And I absolutely adore that game. I decided I was going to have a little look at Killzone because I've never played that.
Mm.
That's obviously Guerrilla, one of their first real mainstream game.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't run. I tried to burn my back up and it wouldn't run. So I thought, right, I'm going to go down this free MC boot route. I've never done it before. So I got myself a MC boot memory card, which I actually got ages ago. I'd never used it. So I plugged that in, got myself a large USB pen drive.
Yeah.
And I can't get anything to run.
No, it's kind of picky about the drives that it supports, and it's ancient USB, so it's like USB 1 standard, I think. So it's quite slow as well. But do you have a PS2 Fat or a Mini?
A Fat.
Okay, then the best way to go about it is really if you have the network adapter that also has an IDE drive slot there, so you can put in an internal hard drive. And then
is that difficult to do, though, to install an internal hard drive?
No, it's plug and play. You get the network adapter. You just.
I've got that.
Just okay. Well, look at the. You need. There are two different versions of it. It needs to be.
I've got like an MC boot. I've got an MC boot No, I won't open it because it'll make loads of noise. I got an MC boot like package from eBay, which came with the memory card and the adapter.
And the adapter for the hard drive?
Yeah, it's like an HDD adapter. It plugs into the network port at the back of the
PS2. Okay, cool. Well, then just get your hands on an IDE drive, if it is an IDE. I know some of the modern remakes is actually SATA drives, I have the old original, so you can just put an IDE drive in there, just slide it into the PS2, and then I guess I have actually never done that myself because I'm actually playing it from a small USB drive, but I had to try a few different drives before I found one that was properly supported.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's what it is. But, I mean, when I go onto the program which boots from USB,
it lists it.
I've got a couple of games on that pen drive, and it lists them.
Okay.
But when I select one and hit play, I just get a black screen. I need to spend a little bit more time. I'm also going to be playing Xenosaga Episode 2 once we're through with the long game on playthrough, which is showing no sign of finishing after 50 hours.
Yes. So I was playing Maximo using that FreeMic boot thing.
Yeah.
But there is one thing they need to know, and that's if you use the external USB drive, the USB port is so slow that it's slower than the DVD drive within the box. So sometimes, for example, in the cutscenes, it would stutter.
Okay. So badly?
Yeah, quite badly on Maximo, yes. But the gameplay was perfect. There was no problem playing the game, but the cutscenes would actually be kind of broken.
Well, that won't work for Xenosaga because that game is 80% cutscene and 20% gameplay.
You need to get that internal drive set up then.
God, yeah, that's on the to-do list.
Yep.
And then the other thing I've been messing around with is just some of this specy stuff. So I've been distracted from over the last couple of days by a game called Jumping Jupiter.
Yeah.
Which is, I've mentioned on the pod before a while back, is an indie homebrew game, I think from about 2019, Manic Miner Clone, by a group or maybe even an individual called Quantum Sheep. It's available on itch if you Google jumping without the G, Jupiter.
Okay.
And for anybody who harkens back to when we played Manic Miner in the game club and likes those single screen collect them ups and head to the exit, this is a really, really good one.
Okay.
So highly recommended Jumping Jupiter by Quantum Sheep.
Mm.
There we go.
Good stuff. So can we go into the news knockers?
You may proceed.
Cool. So you've got the first bit of news here on the list, so let's hear it.
A500 Mini.
Yeah.
It's out this week on the 8th of April.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Get yours now. £120, I think, on Amazon UK.
Okay.
Which seems reasonable for what it is. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the reviews. I mean, I think we've said before, it's not for us, because we've got plenty of means of playing these old games with misters and original hardware, etc. But I think it's a great thing that it exists and people can go and buy a small Amiga.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to seeing actually how many it sells and what the attach rate is and just what people do with it, I think, is quite interesting as well.
Yeah, indeed.
It's out this week.
I'm looking forward to seeing how well it does. It is not for me, but I mean, I would consider it if it's successful and they do the an A500 full-sized or A600 sized, maybe that would be more reasonable. I'd be interested in seeing that. But I say that, though, and I never bought the C64 Maxi or whatever it's called.
No.
Because I have three C64s and I have five or six Amigas, so I'm not really sure what I need this for. But I love that it brings the a lot of Amiga games into hands of more casual retro gamers. And that's the beauty of these, isn't it?
And anyone who picks one up should come and listen to our podcast, of course.
Yes.
Because we quite often talk about the Amiga. We quite often play Amiga games in the game club. So, yeah.
We do like the Amiga.
Hopefully we'll get a whole generation of new listeners. Mm.
Let's see.
Be nice.
Yeah. So, I've written down a piece of news that's actually not retro, but I think it means a lot to me, so I'm going to mention it anyway. So Breath of the Wild 2 won't be coming out until 2023, in the spring, I think they said.
Yeah.
Saddens me a bit, but doesn't surprise me. And really looking forward to finally getting that game at some point.
Was that I didn't even realize it was scheduled to come out this year.
It's been rumored. I'm not sure if it was actually scheduled to come out, but we all assumed actually that it would come out last year at around Christmas time, and then we assumed it'll come out 2022, and now it seems that it'll be 2023 in the spring. That's an official date from Nintendo now.
I feel like Nintendo are building to something.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't know. Whether there is going to be, you know, we only had the new-ish Switch, the OLED Switch last year, didn't we? But just get the impression, you know, we've not had a new Mario. Now it's been 5 years since Mario Odyssey came out.
Is it 5 years already?
Yeah, 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So we are due at least an announcement of a new mainline Mario game.
Yeah.
I would have thought. I just sensed the summer there's going to be something.
Yeah, let's see.
Something is going to be announced. And I just feel it. Games should come out when they're ready, though, right?
Yes, yes. Indeed.
Cyberpunk.
Yes. Actually,
and that, Cyberpunk by all is... accounts now, that, well, that's actually now decent.
Yeah, yeah. I was just thinking about it this past week, that I'd actually like to play Cyberpunk now, because it seems that all the bugs have been ironed out, and it should run pretty good on the platforms we have. So,
if only they had released that version and waited 12 months.
Yeah, yeah.
They've had to dredge up The Witcher now, haven't they, to recover their goodwill? So they've announced that they're making a new Witcher games.
Okay,
get their goodwill back.
Yeah. Well, I need to play Cyberpunk. Maybe that's a candidate for a future playthrough
episode. Definitely.
Or 10 episodes. Is that a huge game as well? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe not for this year then.
Maybe that can be 2023's huge game.
Yes, yes. But I am loving our huge game, Chris. So no worries there.
Yeah. One piece of news that isn't on the list, but I meant to put on there. So Steam Deck, we've mentioned lots of times before. And that's it getting to the hands of people who've pre-ordered.
Mm.
Not yet me or you, which is a shame. But did you see there was a few videos going around, a few news articles going around about this MU deck
has been
creative for it.
Got me all excited, because that's exactly what I want to use it for.
Isn't this, though? I mean, it feels like, for as long as I've been listening to Retro Asylum, as long as I've been part of it, we've been talking about an all-in-one solution for emulation, preferably handheld. We've had certain pieces of hardware over the years that have gone, some of them have been really good, but there's always been limitations somewhere. There's been talk about hacking the Switch to do it, because that would be such a great way to have emulation in your hands. I don't know about you, but this feels like everything that we've ever talked about as being the ultimate perfect emulation solution.
And not only is it handheld, it's also dockable, so you can dock it into your TV and play it in regular mode as well. It does sound really, really good, mate. And I'm not really interested in emulating modern stuff, but it seems it can actually support all the way up to the Switch, so emulating the Switch as well.
Yeah. I mean, which future-proofs it from that. I mean, obviously, we wouldn't advocate anybody emulating games on the Switch. Please go and... Yeah, we must support these publishers and developers, as much as we might hate them at times. It is important that we do it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's also illegal.
But
yeah. No, and no one wants to get in trouble with the authorities. Mm. But for the old stuff, which you can't buy and which isn't available, which is still technically illegal, let's not go there. But the front end looks really nice.
Yes.
And I know... I'd be interested to see what Steve thinks about it, because I know he's someone who likes a nice front end with lots of nice box art and stuff around the games.
Yeah.
But it looks wonderful.
It does.
And it's just making me even more excited to get my hands on one of the machines.
Mm. Yeah, me too. Really looking forward to that. But I haven't heard yet. I mean, ours should actually come out this quarter, shouldn't they?
Well, it's Q2 now.
Yeah.
Mm. So I want mine now.
But I haven't heard anything yet. You and I both pre-ordered the largest one you could get. Isn't that true?
Every time there's a knock on the door, I look out to see if it's Gabe Newell with my Steam Deck.
Yes, he'll probably come around.
Well, he's been delivering them in the States, hasn't he?
True.
Well, why can't he come over to me? My money's just as good as theirs. Come on, Gabe. And then the last bit of news that I had, which I suspect you're probably as interested as I am, but I thought we ought to mention it. So Sony rocked the world last week, didn't they? Rocked the world with their announcement of their revamped Sony Game Pass and PS Plus.
Oh, yeah.
Which merges PS Now and PS Plus. Now, there's a lot of stuff with modern games, which not really surprising. It's not going to be as good as Game Pass, in my opinion. The interesting thing from with the retro hat on is this announcement that one of the tiers, the most expensive one, will make available a library of PS1, PS2, PS3, and PSP games.
Yep.
Which interests me, I think, because having Sony bring these games back to us is a nice way to be able to play some of the library. They've promised hundreds.
Mm.
I dream of libraries of Japan only and North American only RPGs and crazy rhythm games and offbeat puzzle games. I fear that we're going to end up with Tekken, Ridge Racer, the usual Metal Gear, the usual suspects that we can play in a million one other places.
We probably will, yes. We probably will, but still, like the A500 Mini, this puts some of the older games in the hands of the more casual retro gamers, and
yeah.
That's great. Piques their interest and keeps the history of these games going.
And particularly on the PSP as well, which is less accessible, I think, than the actual consoles, the non-handheld consoles.
Yeah.
That's quite interesting. The PSP does have a good library.
I wonder how a PSP game scaled to 55 inches.
Yeah, that's looks interesting.
But
but being able to play Loco Roco again.
Oh, yeah. I was just legally thinking about that.
Which will be nice. But as you say, yeah, how they scale it to the displays will be interesting. Mm. But it's funny, isn't it, how Microsoft have defined now, I think, the online offering with Game Pass, which I think when I see my Xbox, I think of it now as a Game Pass machine. I play Day of the Tentacle Remastered through Game Pass.
Yep.
I only ever play games through Game Pass on the Xbox. I don't have physical games. I'm not sure I ever will for that system. But I see Sony as something completely different, and this doesn't feel like a Game Pass rival. It feels like a way to get at that older library.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing what titles they bring forward on it.
Definitely. It's good that there's a bit of competition there, but I mean, it doesn't rival Game Pass, as you say. Still doesn't.
No. And I'm not sure it's meant to. I don't think they ever wanted to go down that route of making their first party and second party games available on day one. I don't think they ever would do that.
Could be.
But Microsoft are big and bold, and that's what they've chosen to do. It's working for them to an extent, but the PS5 is still outstripping Series X by some distance, I think, worldwide.
Okay. So here we can still, we can't buy the PS5. The Xbox Series X you can find in stores, but the PS5 is nowhere to be seen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
a manufactured shortage, maybe.
Yeah, well, it's probably the chip shortage. I'm sure they don't have anything to do with it themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, who knows?
So let's... Patrons! It's about time we thank our patrons. And while Chris practices a bit and gets ready to sing all of the patrons' names, let's just have a short break.
Missed the boat on a game?
Don't worry, the Playthrough Podcast are bringing it back. Cruise over to the website at playthroughpod.com for episodes and links to our Discord, Twitter and more. Play along with Playthrough and be part of the conversation.
So Matt is ready to sing the patrons. He's been warbling up there in the break. He's a good singer. And he's going to do it in metal fashion.
No, I'm not. But I will be reading them, and we've got some new ones, and that's always nice. We've got, we'd like to thank Mike's Retro Tech,
Derek Young,
Dave Velociraptor,
Nick,
Howard Price,
Cy EC,
Adam Hind?
I think it's Hind.
Hind, sorry.
Should we go with Hind?
Hind.
Chris O'Regan,
James Dunn,
Hans Crombe,
Roushi MSX.
Gitto? I think it's Gitto, isn't it?
Yeah.
We now know.
Yep.
Gitto Threadbare, who supplied us with our wonderful Monkey Island soundtrack tape.
Yes. Chris Atwell.
Paul Bullard.
Harvey Watson.
Martin Jones.
Ninjixel.
Tim TJ Walker.
Ricardo Engel.
Adrian Nelson.
Heavy Metal Dawn.
James Bentley.
Tony Parkinson.
Gaz H.
Mel Woods.
Red Crested Breagle.
Kane and Rince, the podcast.
Lambton Worm.
Salvio Calabrese.
Mitsuyama.
Riswin, or King Kangaroover.
Clint Humphrey.
Mark Bulon, or Kid.
Paul Ashton.
Chris Rowe.
John Shepherd.
Lauren Giroux.
Deadlock.
Who did our beautiful homepage. Thanks a lot, mate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aaron Maupin.
Jim Orbit, IT.
John Veal.
Thomas Goffin.
Andy Marsh.
Patrick Fust.
Lauren.
Andrew Gilmore.
Stephen Studdard.
Matt Sullivan.
Magnus Ispiana.
Darren Coles.
Gary Heather.
Edward Fitzpatrick.
Nick Lees.
And Blake Brett. Thank you to all of you.
Yes.
It is much appreciated.
Thank you. So.
It's a long list, mate. It's a long list, that.
Oh, that is a long list, yes.
I feel like I need to sit down. Gets longer.
Very, very nice.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you to all of them.
So, mate, let's get into Day of the Tentacle. I see as the first part you've reminded me that we need a reminder of the vote. That was easy. It was unanimous. Everybody voted for Day of the Tentacle. So
we cheated.
We cheated. I found out for the fifth time, I think, that you've never played Day of the Tentacle, and it shocked me for the fifth time. So this time I put my foot down. I said, we need to play. We need you to play Day of the Tentacle now. So we dictated the game this time, didn't we?
Yeah. Hmm? That's interesting, that, to think about why I never played it. I mean, did you play it back in the day?
Yes, yes. I bought the original floppy drive or floppy disk version for my 486 SX25. One of our listeners, I think it was John V, mentions, he bought it when he got his Sound Blaster card. I did as well. When I got my Sound Blaster card, I got this game as well. Finally getting proper sound instead of PC speaker, yeah. Bieber sound. And then seeing it for the first real time with this game just totally blew me away.
So when did you play the talkie version? Can you remember?
A couple years later. I have the CD version as well, original. I bought that because I love the game so much. So I've actually bought that game twice. This was back in the day where I was in high school, and I used to love my adventure games. So I bought them with a friend, and we'd take turns being the one who actually got to keep the game. We paid 50% each, and every other game you get to keep, but at least you get to play them. So we'd take turns buying these, and Day of the Tentacle was one of the first ones we did that with, I think, the floppy version. So, and he, of course, got to keep the box and the game. So I bought the CD version for myself, maybe in 95 or something like that.
So would you just, if anything, LucasArts put anything out, you just pick it up because it was Lucas?
Pretty much, yeah. At that point in time, yes.
Yeah. Just trying to think why I didn't play it. I mean, I remember being aware of it back in the day, but the notable ones I didn't play from the time were Day of the Tentacle and Full Throttle. And it makes me feel like I've got something against Tim Schafer.
Yeah, seems so.
Because they were the two. I mean, I played Fate of Atlantis. I remember getting almost immediately after it came out, The Dig, Grim Fandango, which is obviously Tim's magnus opus, isn't it?
Mm.
That was a game that I played immediately. But then, yeah, just Day of the Tentacle, just I didn't. And I would have just come off playing Monkey Island 2, which I absolutely adored.
So knowing but you is probably because it's called Maniac Mansion 2. And you're such a completionist. So you probably didn't buy it because you never finished played Maniac Mansion.
You know, it could have been. Hmm? It could well have been that. I'm not sure I was so particular about such things when I was 13. But it could well have been that. I can't think why I didn't play it. I mean, I've always been one of those games, oh, I really should play that. Really should play it ever since. And until now, I never have.
Mm.
And I've clearly been missing out.
yes.
It is great.
So I love many of the LucasArts adventure games, most of them actually. But this probably has to be my favorite. There are some close runners up as well.
Should we do some little bit of history?
Yep.
It's probably one of the best documented games, actually, and the stories around the development, because the wonderful Tim Schafer and Double Fine did such brilliant work when they remastered this in 2017 or whenever it was. I think it was 2017, wasn't it? Maybe a little bit earlier.
Maybe 16, yeah.
But there's so much out there now in terms of the... You've got the developer's commentary track on the remaster, which is brilliant, if not a bit light maybe, but it's really, really good. With Tim Schafer and Dave Grossman and Larry Ahern and Chris Chan... I think Peter McConnell's on it as well, one of the Peter's on it as well. So there's so much, and if you go on the Double Fine YouTube channel and you search for Day of the Tentacle, you'll see all kinds of stuff, including Tim Schafer and Dave Grossman being filmed playing through the entire game together, and that is absolutely hilarious.
I think that was actually the game was remastered in 2016, and that video is from 2016 or 2015, before they actually started working on the remaster.
I think it was when it was announced, wasn't it? They released a video to say, right, we've announced we're going to do this, and Dave Grossman was brought on board to do it.
So I've actually had that video running in the background this morning. It's a 3-hour playthrough where they're just chatting and playing. And it's funny to see that at that point in time, they hadn't played it. Dave hadn't played it in, he said, 13 years. And it's been a few years with Tim as well. A lot of the puzzles, they actually misremember how it's supposed to be. But when they get there in the game, they do remember it. But when they're chatting about it, I'm going, no, that's wrong, Tim. That's not how that puzzle works.
See, when Dave Grossman finds that you can click on the bell, and he in the hotel lobby right at the start, and he just clicks the bell.
Ding, 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 ding.
It's really good, and they clearly still get on very, very well.
Yes,
the two, because at the time when they did make it back in 1993, it was released. They had never led a project before, which is pretty incredible.
Yep.
They've been at Lucas for 3 years. They both joined in 1989. They studied at Scum University as the old guys, the likes of Ron Gilbert, as he was then, was used to style it. And then they worked as understudies to Ron and the rest of the team on the first two Monkey Island games, doing the dialogue, designing the puzzles, and really learning from one of the guy who wrote the rules on how to make a fair adventure.
Mm.
So their education was very, very strong.
Yes, agreed.
They couldn't be trusted with a novel concept. I think the story goes, or as I've read it, that Ron Gilbert, when he left LucasArts in 1992 to form Humongous, left behind a manuscript or some ideas of what his next project would have been. And he'd always wanted to do a sequel to Maniac Mansion. There was a lot of clamour for it in the gaming press and the fans. And he had this idea of some kind of time travel involving, again, multiple kids and this time travel concept. I think the bosses at Lucas went to Tim and Dave and said, right, you know, Ron thinks that you're ready to lead this project. He's leaving. We would like you guys to co-direct and co-produce this game. Here's Ron's thoughts. Go ahead and do it. I think Dave Grossman said, I think they thought that was the least damage they could do if they worked on a sequel rather than something they would come up with themselves. So they did it.
And they did a hell of a job.
And completely a joint directors as well.
Yep.
I didn't know this until I read it, but did you realise that in the opening credits of the game, which name appears first is completely randomised within the code?
No, I didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's completely random that you might fire it up and you might get Dave or you might get Tim. Mm. It's completely random.
Yeah.
Development, so it appears when, sorry, Matt's
gone. On the same time, at the same time would be easier, but hey, programmers got to be programmers.
Yeah, exactly. It was, the animation was largely done by, is Tim Ahern? Have I got, no, it's not Tim. Is it Pete? What's his name, the animator guy?
Larry Ahern,
that's right. Heavily inspired, of course, by the cartoons of Chuck Jones and the old style.
Yeah.
American cartoons, which I think anybody can see. And a lot of the backgrounds done by Peter Chan.
Mm. Yes, yes. So once you finish the game, or maybe you can even do it before, but in the remaster, there's a lot of concept art you can go through as well.
Yes.
Man, I would give my right arm for one of those pieces hanging on my wall at home.
Yeah, there's some really good stuff.
Yes.
Apparently each room was done in a day by Peter Chan.
Yeah, he said each room he spent a week on. So,
oh, did he?
Yeah, I think it was a work week. He had it all planned out. Or maybe it was at a number of days. So he'd sketch it one day, he'd scan it in and get the line art, I think, done the next day. And then he'd have to fill the colors the third day. And there was something, he had this whole process he mentioned in the commentary.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. They're brilliant. I mean, the game looks like a cartoon.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Doesn't it?
It does have great visuals. And I mean, for my money, this is probably the adventure game, point-and-click adventure game that's from that age that stands the test of time best. I mean, you could release this today and it would still be a perfect game design that the people would understand and would pick up. Even the younger generation would be able to play this game because the puzzle design is so good. The only thing that would need to be touched up, and which was touched up, I guess, in the remastered version, is probably the graphics, because you and I, we do prefer our pixel art and see the beauty in that, but the younger generation probably doesn't.
No. 6 floppies it shipped on.
Was it 6? Okay. For some reason, 6. I've got 7 floppies in my head.
Oh, maybe it did go into 7. Mm. 6 or 7. I think there was one. I was listening to an interview with Tim Schafer and Dave Grossman. Dave spent a lot of the final days of development before it went gold just compressing a lot of the assets to get them down to as small as possible. I think he did say it ended up just tipping over into 7 floppies.
Okay. I do recall 7. Having 7 floppies back in the day for it.
7 1.4 megabyte floppies, obviously without the speech that only
the speech
the
was CD on page. The on the intro. So the intro was actually voiced, or at least I'm not sure if we'll get to that in a second, but the intro is like split into 3 parts. So at least the first part of the intro was fully voiced. I'm not sure whether the second and third are, but probably that intro would have been the first 2 discs.
Yeah, but let's talk about that intro, because I think at the time, and even now, it still stands up as pretty spectacular, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So, just a fun little thing about the voices. The intro was, of course, fully voiced, but they got to design the game as a, not a talky game, but as a text-only game, which means that they had a lot more text in there that they would do if they had to do a talky game, because, of course, it's more expensive to produce.
Yeah.
So Tim and Dave both mentioned that they were really happy that it was not supposed to be a voiced game. Yeah. And then in the end, they said, you need to voice it. And that was the perfect way for them, because that means it was too late to cut a lot of text out. So they just got a huge talky version instead.
Yeah, and it was quite late in development, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that
it was.
They decided to put the speech in.
Yeah. So CD wasn't the medium for the, as we just mentioned, it was a floppy release, and that was how it was planned. So.
Yeah, because what was missed 1992, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, they definitely say that missed is the reason that they ended up having to put voices on this.
Because I think it was due to ship in for Christmas 1992.
Okay.
And when it became clear that they weren't going to hit that, there's a lady who comes up a lot in Kelly Flock.
Okay.
Comes up a lot in, I think she was one of the executive producers at LucasArts. Mm. And it was her idea, apparently, to say that if you're not going to ship this in time for Christmas, let's pause then and get some voice actors in.
Yeah,
and do a talking. As you said, a lot of the text was already written. But it's interesting, though, how they talk about the difference that having speech makes.
Mm.
Because I think Tim Schafer said that during the Monkey development, they could tweak the script right up until they sealed the deal on it.
Yeah,
they could just keep changing the lines. But obviously, when you've got a cast, once that track has been, those tracks have been recorded, that's it then. You can't change it.
Nope. And that's why he was so glad that it was added so late in the progress, in the process of creating this game.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I wonder what it, I mean, I think maybe it was Dave Grossman who said that he was really struggling to find the voice for Bernard.
Mm.
And they were they both could hear Bernard in their heads, but they couldn't work out who, what voice it was. And then they found the guy who played Bernard, who was a famous actor from a US TV show.
Okay.
And when they heard his voice and someone said, well, what about him? they realized that that was absolutely perfect.
Mm. Yeah, oh, I think all the voice work is really good here.
For the time,
yeah.
I mean, you think about some of the absolutely shocking voice acting performances in games, yes, in the late 90s, yes, and early 2000s.
Yeah, where it would just be people hanging around the offices recording.
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, this is streets ahead of a lot of which... And I think we've said that before. I think we said the same with Under a Killing Moon as well.
Mm.
That a lot of that acting was so much better than some of the stuff that came later.
Yeah, yeah. So funny little thing, now that we're talking about the floppy and the CD version. So I remember this game having a copy protection. Did you know where that was? Because on the CD version, they decided nobody can copy a CD. It's a huge amount of data, and nobody would ever be able to burn their own CDs at home. So they just disabled the copy protection on the CD version. But
where was it on the floppy version?
It's in the plans. When you send the plans to Hoagie, and he picks them up and looks at them, so he needs to do that in the floppy version. There were some beakers that had some fluid in it, and I'm sure there were some golden nuggets you could... There's something along those lines as well. And then you need to go consult your manual. Okay, if that one is 3, then it has to be 7 over there. And so that's as far as I recall. I haven't actually looked that up, but that's how I remember it.
Brilliant.
Mm.
And as you say, that doesn't happen in the CD version.
Nope, it's not there in the CD version at all. So I had almost forgotten that it was there. So
how did you play it this time around then, using the remaster?
Yeah. I went for the remastered with the classic sound, graphics, and interface as well. So everything classic, but the commentary track on.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So I bought the game on GOG.
Yeah.
And then, in good conscience then, having bought the remaster on GOG, and also subscribing to Game Pass where it's on, I felt that I could in good conscience find an ISO, which I then moved over to my Pentium 2 PC, and got that running there, which was felt like a nice way to play.
Yep. So on a proper CRT, even.
Yeah, on a proper CRT. It's a very small CRT monitor that I have, but a
those
small
graphics
CRT
do,
monitor.
Do look better on a CRT at that age. So.
Yeah. And cool. I did notice that when I booted up the remaster on the big 55-inch on the Xbox, actually, I played them with the remaster graphics because the pixel art did look a little rough.
No. Chris, don't give in. Don't agree
on a
with
CRT.
The Andy
there's
and
no
Jim on that. Don't.
There's no doubt about it. And I must say, the remaster graphics on Day of the Tentacle are way better, way better, in my opinion, than the Secret of Monkey Island remaster graphics.
Oh yeah, they did a good job here, definitely. But man, that pixel art is just so beautiful. So
yeah,
even I was playing it on the PC, so a 24-inch. LCD display, it's still beautiful. So
yeah absolutely. Mm-hmm. Should we talk about the characters?
Yeah, let's do so. But maybe before we do this, we are definitely going to spoil this entire game. Of course, this is a story driven puzzle driven game, so if you actually haven't played Day of the Tentacle and you want to,
yeah,
turn us off now, because we will spoil this completely.
Yeah. So why don't we have a listener clip here, mate, before we start to get into some of the detail?
That's a brilliant idea. Let's go with, let's go with John V, my Sound Blaster buddy, who also experienced the beauty of the Sound Blaster sound for the first time with this game.
Here he is.
Hi there, it's John here, John V from the Discord group. And this month I've been saving the world from purple tentacles. Nearly 30 years since I last succeeded. Day of the Tentacle was the first game I picked up when I got a Sound Blaster card for my first PC. Like many people on the Discord channel, I got to experience the joys of fiddling with DMA channels and IRQs. But not this time, it was the remaster for me. I was soon running around the mansion, getting barfed down from the ceiling, picking up the chattering teeth, and other early puzzles that I clearly remembered very well. But memories are very strange things. Some parts of the game, like opening the safe and charging the battery from the kite, I couldn't remember at all. when I did get stuck, it was just a case of coming back the next day with a fresh view and then making progress. None of the puzzles are too obscure, and the time travelling with multiple characters gave an additional dimension to the typical point-and-click mechanic. I believe that if it was released today, this game would still stand up. It's really interesting to see how people on Discord who have never played the game got on. Given the freedom you have to solve the puzzles in whatever order you like, it was interesting to see the different order people took. Who opens the safe before getting the chattering teeth? That's just weird. Was fun watching Reese, King Kong Groover stream the game, but really hard to sit back and not offer too much advice or solutions as he progressed. Good to see so many people finish the game. I hope it has turned Kit into a point-and-click fan, and it has been a change to revisit a classic game in the game club rather than uncover a hidden gem. Cheers all, be interested to see who we play next time.
So that was John V. Thanks, mate. Thanks for your clip, the old faithful, not letting us down as usual. Mm. We appreciate it. So let's get into this, Mads. The best place to start is the intro.
Yes.
The famous intro video. Do you want to talk about how the story kicks off?
Yeah, let's do that. So it starts off with a hamster bringing a letter from the mansion to Bernard Bonelli, who's living with Hoagie and Laverne. Hoagie is a roadie and Laverne is a med student, isn't she, I think?
Yeah.
And the letter says that they need to get to the mansion right now because there's something, the tentacles need help. The green tentacle that's in Maniac Mansion as well needs some help. So they're going there. There's this beautiful animated intro sequence actually that was made by the intern. So he got that as his assignment when they started. And they go to the mansion. They find out that the purple tentacle that we see in the intro, that grows arms, has gone crazy and wants to take over the world. So Dr. Fred's got him tied up in the basement, and he's going to fix the problem, of course. And then Bernard, he thinks that he's supposed to save Purple Tentacle. So he saves Purple Tentacle, thus letting him loose on the world. And this is the problem we now need to solve, because Purple Tentacle has gone mad
funny.
And is going to take over the world. Just because he now has two arms, it means he can do anything, I guess. And
So this intro sequence was meant to be one long sequence, wasn't it?
Yes.
Leading right up to the bit when you get control. It was meant to be 7 minutes long, but they broke it up by having a little bit of gameplay where you have to open the clock and get down into the basement.
Yeah, that's true. So, of course, it starts off with you seeing Purple Tentacle drinking the toxic waste coming out of the mansion and that thus mutating and getting the arms and saying that he wants to take on the world. And then there's this little sequence with the getting the letter, and there's the driving sequence, and then you get into the game, because then the three kids are in the mansion. They split up. I think Laverne's supposed to be looking upstairs, and Hoagie looking in one section of the downstairs area, and the hallway is where Bernard is going. And he opens up the grandfather clock after just clicking around for, I would say that would be a couple of minutes, then you'll open up the grandfather clock, and he enters that, and that starts the next part of the intro, where you let the Purple Tentacle go, and Dr. Fred finds out that you did that, and now you need to travel back in time using his fantastic Chronojohns.
The Chronojohns.
The Chronojohns, yes.
Hilarious. And a portaloo that can travel back in time.
Yes. And they were just supposed to travel back to yesterday and turn off the slush-o-matic, which just was leading. Apparently, its function is leading toxic waste out into the water. Not sure why he does that, the slush-o-matic.
He says because every mad scientist needs sludge, right?
Does he?
Something like, yeah.
So they're just supposed to travel back to yesterday. But, of course, something goes wrong because of the diamond that is necessary to run this machine is a cheap mail order jewel, as he said. So it breaks and it throws Hoagie 200 years back in time and Laverne 200 years forward in time. And Bernard just comes back to the present. And this creates the whole setup for the time travel. Now you get to switch between, well, initially only Bernard and Hoagie, but now you get to switch between the kids. and you need to solve puzzles by passing stuff back and forth two times, sometimes not passing it back and forth, but hiding it somewhere so it so something happens to it in the future, and so on and so forth. So that's the whole setup, isn't it?
Yeah, it's obviously been used in many games, the whole concept of time travel, but I think here the way these puzzles are, the way it's used in creating the puzzles and your solutions to those puzzles is ingenious. And to use one example, obviously we know that wine, if left, will turn very vinegary and will ultimately turn to something which tastes like vinegar. But just using that, just coming up with that, I mean, I would never, my brain would never ever be able to come up with these things.
No.
So that's, and they come up with multiples of them.
Beautiful little puzzle where 200 years in the past, Hoagie makes sure that a bottle of wine goes into a time capsule, and 200 years in the future, Laverne opens that and sends it back in time through the Chrono Jones to Hoagie again, and now it's vinegar.
As vinegar, Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is daft, isn't it? It's just completely goofy and daft.
Yes.
That there is the whole, the fact that you've got tentacles which are sprouted a little arm, and there is a zany logic to it all.
Yes, there is indeed. I mean, all puzzles, for me at least, make sense. There's one puzzle that in the interviews Dave always excuses for having put in there, because I'm guessing he's gotten a lot of contact from fans who didn't understand that. But that's there's a puzzle where you need to wash the car carriage to make it rain, and because he always learned as a kid, his father would always say that as soon as you start washing your car, it'll start raining. So he thought everybody would jump to that conclusion.
Have you heard that saying?
No.
See, I was completely familiar with that.
Okay. I hadn't, but one thing that excuses it anyway is that there is a hint in there. I mean, if there you is. Look at the carriage as Bernard, he'll just say that it's covered in crud. But if you look at the car in the present, which is also dirty, I think Bernard will say something along the lines of, it will start raining if I clean that, or something like that. So.
Yeah. I think my problem with the puzzles, and that one actually didn't bother me, because I didn't, and this is the problem I have with some of them, is I didn't realize why I needed to make it rain.
Oh, okay.
You hadn't talked to Benjamin Franklin yet.
Isn't that it?
No.
Oh, okay. So let's get. Hold that thought, because that is something very important about the design of this game. But let's get to that a bit later on. There are some puzzles, actually a lot of puzzles, that you can solve before you know why you need them. I'm thinking that was a design choice they made deliberately. But let's see if we can remember to actually get back to that. There's another thing is that this game is, for an adventure game, quite small in the areas you can visit, because it's the same areas. You're in the mansion and the surrounding field, really, only in all three time jumps, right? So you're in the mansion 200 years ago, and in the future, and then in the present. So the world doesn't feel so big. And some people prefer more exploration, of course, and didn't really gel with that idea, but I loved it. It made all of the puzzles so tight, and the puzzle solving so tight. But horses for courses, I guess.
But it's very dense, though. I mean, there is usually something to do or a puzzle to solve in every single room.
Yes. There are very few rooms that are just filling.
No, I mean, and there's very few items which you don't have to use. There are a few red herrings in there, but there are very few that you don't. You know, the trophy that you get from the future is one which I was racking my brains. What could I use that for? But you don't use at all. But and the other thing the game does, which is quite clever as well, right at the start, is that it limits you to just Hoagie and Bernard.
Yes,
because Laverne is not accessible off the bat, because when she was catapulted into the future, she's ended up dangling in a tree.
Yes.
So we see this in a cutscene. Cutscenes, right? I mean, they weren't massively Well, I suppose by this point they were starting to be used more and more. But you see these little cutaways every now and again, one of which is Laverne dangling in this tree. And you don't get access to Laverne until you solve a puzzle in the past, which is George Washington cutting down the kumquat tree, which he believes is a cherry tree.
Yes. So did you know that story, the story about George Washington and the cherry trees?
No, did you?
No, me neither. But sure that the Roush you mentioned on the forums, he's American. Of course. See, that made sense to him.
See, I think to get, I'm starting to unpack some of the reasons why, for me, I think this is a great game, a really good game, but why it doesn't quite live up to the first two Monkey games for me.
Okay. But I think it's still explained in story because he tells us that...
Oh, he does.
That he hates cherry trees and there's stuff going on there that will lead you to the right solution anyway. So it's not a problem for me.
But I think if you were aware of these things from just your cultural environment or stuff that you'd learnt in school... I think the fact that George Washington jokes are made about his wooden teeth and the fact he's really proud of the fact he cuts down cherry trees, I think they'd land more.
Yep.
I think it would work as like a comedy thing as well.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Definitely. It would make it better.
Whereas for us, it's almost a vehicle for a puzzle. I mean, I knew nothing. And I did Google, and all of this stuff is there.
Mm.
You know, I did Google George Washington cherry trees, and he was famous for that stuff. But for here, you very quickly realise that he's looking out the window. He's looking at there's a tree in the window.
Mm.
He's talking about cherry trees. That tree is a kumquat tree.
Yep.
And it is funny in itself in that, you know, you paint the kumquat red and he thinks it's a cherry tree and he goes and cuts it down. And
so he actually literally says at some point, Hoagie challenges him and says that, I don't think you have it anymore. And he says, sadly, if there was a cherry tree here, I'd show you. But
Yeah. The puzzles are generally really well signposted, aren't they?
Oh, yes, they are. They are.
There are hints in the dialogue pretty much for every single puzzle.
Mm.
The only thing I would say is that you have to make sure that you have a notepad on hand because you can't replay the dialogue.
Oh, okay. I didn't even think about that. But, of course, I would have had a completely different experience this time around than you because I know this game by heart. So
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So for a lot of the dialogue, it's like when it's that one that you mentioned about Bernard in the car. I mean, he will say that every time you look at it, but there is definitely some dialogue. I think there's one with weird cousin Ned,
yes,
in the present, who's got the stamp collection. I think he says something about something else, which if you'd written it down, you would know. If you didn't, then he will never say that again because you are left with really only one last line of dialogue after you've exhausted the tree.
Mm.
So, but it is all there. I mean, this game has won many plaudits over the years for really well signposting its puzzles.
Yeah.
You just have to make sure that you've got a pen on hand to write it down when it does.
So how did you feel about the area being relatively small, actually just being the mansion?
Yeah, I like it, mm. Yeah.
So the mansion is quite big. There's the attic. There's two rooms on the, what would that be, the second floor, three rooms on the first floor, and then three, four rooms on the ground floor as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But still, it's only that area.
I like it. I liked walking around the presents because I spent most of my time initially, the first two or three hours, all in the past with Hoagie.
Mm.
And I felt like I'd explored the past mansion pretty much to death, and I'd done all that I could do before switching to Bernard,
okay,
and doing exactly the same thing again in the present, and it was fun walking into some of those rooms and thinking, oh yeah, this is George Washington's bedroom from the past,
yeah,
and now it's got some conventioner, convention goer,
yep,
sleeping in it,
yep,
yeah, that kind of stuff was fun.
Mm.
I didn't feel like the future was as fleshed out.
No, it definitely wasn't. There were fewer rooms. Stuff was like boarded off. You couldn't access it. You couldn't go to the attic. And think the second floor was just one big room, really?
Second floor was just where the contest was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, which felt like it was not underdeveloped because I'm sure it was intended. It just felt like they had They had a future zone because they had to. They had to have something there in the future.
Yeah.
It felt like where they really loved spending their time was in the past and doing all that stuff about the Constitution and the founding fathers and whatnot.
Yeah, I think you may be right. But mate, before we go any further, let's hear from Dave Velociraptor.
Yes.
He's got something to say about the lack of exploration.
Hi, it's Dave Velociraptor on Discord. This month I played through Day of the Tentacle for I think the fourth or the fifth time. I played it first on floppy, and then on CD, and then remastered, likely first when it came out back in the 90s, and then when I got a CD drive, and then when the remaster came out. I didn't think I would remember the puzzles and didn't think I was remembering them, but unfortunately I must have been, because I breezed through the game, often doing things as I saw them rather than as they were needed. It was still enjoyable playing through the game, as it's still charming, but I was disappointed that I remembered as much. I definitely prefer the original graphics over the remastered. Some people in Discord mentioned the director's commentary, so I think maybe in a few years' time I'll do it that way. But it would likely be the last time I played the game. I don't think there's much more to get from it. I really enjoyed seeing the mansion in three different time zones as it changed, but I also felt that as a result there was very little exploration going on. From very early in the game I had access to almost all the areas, so I prefer an adventure game where there's more discovery going on and more areas to visit as the game progresses. So in my mind, Sam and Max, which was out around the same time, had more exploration and the feeling of progression. And certainly the Monkey Island games did as well. It is still, however, a fantastic game. The puzzles are fair and reasonable. Although with all LucasArts scum games, it falls down slightly where you can just use everything on everything else to progress without puzzling out what you're really supposed to be doing. Although that is better than the regular Sierra deaths or soft-locking yourself or puzzling over exactly how they want the verbs and nouns to be used in a text adventure, and the frustration when you finally give in and look up a walkthrough and find out that you had ruled out the right answer hours ago because of verb-noun problems. This is my first month doing the game club, so I really enjoyed playing the game at the same time as other people, so I hope to do that next month. I guess it's this month already, as I'm late, and I'll speak to you then.
So we're back. Thanks, Dave. That's really, really appreciate that, mate. I think that's your first listener clip, so yeah, really grateful for that. Keep them coming. So, Matt, how do you feel generally in adventure games? Because when you start an adventure game, and maybe you didn't have it with this one because you knew the puzzles and you knew exactly what you were doing, really, the first, I don't know, depending on how big the area is, and we've said that this is a nice, sharp, condensed area. But really, the opening hours are spent going from room to room, picking up anything that you can pick up, talking to whoever you can talk to.
Yes.
And generally working out what the puzzles are.
Mm.
Do you enjoy that, or is that just busy work for you?
I definitely enjoy that. I'm a huge fan of point-and-click adventures. I'm picking up everything that isn't nailed down. And in an adventure like this, where there are very few red herrings, it's a joy to do. In other adventure games where they, 9 out of 10 things you pick up, you don't even need, that then it becomes a chore and it becomes annoying. But this just hits the spot for me in that regard. And I find that this game is so full of story to tell you in all the rooms as well that you go through, that you never get bored. It's very rarely do you enter a room where the only thing you need to do there is pick up a thing or two. There are people to talk to, and they'll all give you important parts of the story. There's no superfluous storytelling here at all, is there? It's kind of a very narrow path that they want to lead you down.
Yeah, there's old ladies to push downstairs.
Yes, yes.
Convention goers to for the tickle fingers to get to work on. I agree, but I do think for maybe some people who don't like point and click adventures like we do, the first hour, the first 2 hours, the first 3 hours, depending on how big it is, I wonder whether it can feel a little bit chorey as you just wander around picking up these items that you don't really know what they are,
yeah,
you know, why you would ever use them. And then you start to realize, okay, well, there's a guy there who's depressed and I need to make him happy. And he says that he wants to be respected. And
so in that regard, this game, let's talk about the whole puzzles out of order thing, or the more open approach to puzzle solving that this game introduces. This game is different than a lot of other adventure games in the regard that they don't gate what you can do based on what they think you know. It's actually an for lack of a better word, an open world. Because you can do anything that you are meant to be doing to solve the puzzles here, even before you know why you're doing it. So they've chosen that. A good example, actually, is you just talked about pushing old ladies down the stairs. At some point, you need to push Edna, who's sitting in a chair. You need to push her out of the door. But there's a statue holding a sword in the way, because the sword is on the statue's left side. And because it's on the left side, Edna can grab that and just get back into the room like that. So she won't fall down the stairs. So you need to, in the past, hand a left-handed hammer to a guy who's right-handed, and then he'll break the statue. The two twins, what are they called? Jed and Set? Jed and, yeah, something like that. Jeb and Sep or something. But you need to hand him a left-handed hammer, so he breaks the statue and his brother takes over instead. And of course, he's left-handed, so he was holding the sword in his left hand, but the other brother is right-handed, so he'll be holding it in his right hand, and voila, the statue's sword will be in the other side, and now you can push the old lady down the stairs.
Yeah,
and of course, it's easy to just do that puzzle in the past before you get to the present and see that you need it. But
yeah, and it's exactly, which is exactly what I did.
Yes, and a lot of people on our Discord forums have actually been talking about that, and I think most people don't really like that because it doesn't feel as rewarding, because it doesn't feel like they solved the puzzle.
Yeah,
but I'm sure I can imagine the talks that were going on then back then and when they were designing this, because the only alternative is also quite annoying, and a lot of adventure games do this. So if the standard response when trying to put the left-handed hammer down where the right-handed hammer was I don't want to do that, or I don't see why I should do that, or I can't do that, then you'd need to go to the future, figure out that something is wrong, try to push it down the stairs once, for example, and somehow make the leap in your mind
I would hoagie know that
yes,
banana
exactly.
Figured,
so it doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. I mean, this way of doing it actually makes more sense, but I can completely see why it would annoy some people, because I even could feel it on myself when I was playing this game. I knew what the puzzles were. So I made sure to try to push her down the stairs before I fixed that puzzle, just to get that animation and see what was happening. And I can see that if you don't know the game, then actually that is a bit of a disappointment, because you're missing out on some stuff.
See, I had no idea right now that she would... So I've been wondering what difference does it make? Because when you do that in the past and you swap the hammers, which I did really early on, it cuts away to the present and you see Edna sitting in the room and you see the statue change.
Yes. Yeah.
So, and then it was only later, and it actually took me ages to figure out that simply to get Edna out of that room, you simply just had to push Edna and
he
kicks her down the stairs. And she just obviously went, because I'd already done the statue thing long before.
Yeah, and that's the same thing that happened to you with the battery.
Idea.
For example, you didn't know why you were supposed to make it rain, because you hadn't talked to Franklin, who was trying to catch lightning. So he wanted a storm to come in.
Where was Franklin? Could you go and talk to him?
Yes, he was there. Just go right on the lawn in front of the house, and you'd see him. He'd be there. He'd have his kite up, and he'd be telling you about trying to catch electricity, catch lightning.
Okay. Because if you go right, you get to where the outhouses are, right?
No, that's left. If you go up back the house, then on the left-hand side, the outhouses are, and on the right-hand side is that little hill where Franklin is trying to...
Ah, okay, so I didn't even see him. Before we just talk about that, let's listen to Aaron Maupin, because he also talks about this solving puzzles before you actually need to.
Let's do it.
Here he is.
Hi, this is Maupin with some thoughts on Day of the Tentacle, LucasArts' sequel to Maniac Mansion. I was and am a huge fan of Maniac Mansion, so in 1993 when Day of the Tentacle was released, I was beyond excited. However, playing it on a friend's PC, the Looney Tunes-inspired zany graphics really disappointed me. I liked the less wacky and more deadpan humor of the first game, so I basically ignored Day of the Tentacle for almost 30 years. Until this month's Game Club. This month I played the CD-ROM version using Dospian on the Raspberry Pi 400. And I must admit, I was wrong to have ignored Day of the Tentacle all these years. It's a fantastic game, and very, very funny. It's much funnier than Maniac Mansion, and the time travel mechanic makes for some really inventive and hilarious puzzles. I particularly liked loading the dryer with $800,000 worth of quarters and drying a sweater for 200 years, just to have it ding finish just as Laverne walks into the laundry room. Unfortunately, I feel like many of the puzzles are so convoluted that I had solved portions of them before I even knew why I was solving them. For example, I made a vacuum cleaner appear in the future mansion basement before I needed one or had even been into that room. The game very quickly gives you access to many rooms and items, so at times it feels a bit overwhelming. Maniac Mansion does a better job of limiting access to areas and items, so you get a real sense of exploration. I still feel Maniac Mansion is the better point-and-click adventure game, though admittedly that may be nostalgia talking. I managed to complete Day of the Tentacle without any hints or walkthroughs, but I did have some help from my 7-year-old daughter. I let her play while I was making dinner, and she just walked around the mansion opening and closing doors. And I'll just say that if you've finished the game, you probably know which puzzle she helped me solve. I think the funniest gag in Day of the Tentacle was the human show sequence. I laughed out loud when Laverne talks to the tentacle doctor, who tells her that all the human pets are in good shape, even the dead one. Thanks so much for choosing Day of the Tentacle for March, and I look forward to some 2.5D specky action next month.
Thanks a lot for your clip, mate. It's great that you've enjoyed playing Day of the Tentacle, but I have to say it is rose-tinted spectacles when you say that Maniac Mansion is the better game. I love Maniac Mansion, but it hasn't aged very well, in my opinion.
No, but I can see why he would prefer Maniac Mansion. I don't. But I think it probably is the style of game that you prefer. Just going back to that point about the solving the puzzles thing. So and the whole washing the car. Yeah, I'd done a lot of that stuff. So I was quite fixated about getting the carriage wash because I came across it quite early. And it's like, right, okay, but I clearly need to do this. And then you've got the maid in George Washington's room and you have to distract her. And that ends up being a very simple puzzle, but one which I think a few of us were trying to overthink.
Yes.
You simply just have to push the bed and it messes it up and then it takes longer so you can nab the soap. I did that. It started raining. Ben Franklin, who I'd not seen at all in the game until that point, runs in. And thinking, okay, well, now I can go and talk to him. I think I already had the battery at this point because you can, okay. Again, depending on what order, I'd already had the battery. I knew I needed to charge it.
Mm.
So it's raining, and I think then in one of the conversations that you have with Ben Franklin, you can say, oh, it's raining outside. And then he says, oh, it's raining, I'll go and fly my kite, and then use battery on kite, etc., etc. So there was a lot of stuff which I knew I was solving things, and I knew it was all quite important because that is really the end of Hoagie's arc and getting him back to the future.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It was all kind of just a bit like, well, okay, I don't really know why I'm doing all this, but it feels important.
So maybe they should have. I mean, I'm the only one who's taking the stance that maybe this is a good design decision. A lot of people on Discord have definitely thought the other way. So maybe it would have been better if they just had a stuck piece of audio for the three characters said, maybe I need to do this later and break the
fourth
wall.
Yeah, but that would have felt... There. No, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, that would have felt strange. I think if it was all it done in the one time period, that might have worked. But then if you, in a completely different character, in a completely different time zone, would have discovered some piece of information, which then changes Hoagie's response to something. And to my mind, if I'd have gone and tried something and he did his whole, I don't wanna, then I would never have tried that again because that is not a solution to a problem.
That's my thinking as well. But they could have made them say something fourth wall breaking, like looking into the camera and saying, maybe I should do that later. But again, would that be better? Not sure. It would lead to some of the puzzle solving maybe be slightly more satisfactory because you'd actually see why you were solving the puzzle. And that is a problem, of course. And as I said, knowing the puzzles, I would always line it up so that I actually got to see everything.
And
But the funny thing is, I don't remember having this thought at all playing it back in the day. Maybe by chance, I just got to see everything and knew why I was solving the puzzles.
Yeah. Mm. What's your favorite puzzle?
What's my favorite puzzle? Ah, there are so many. I love putting in, I don't know how many hundred thousands in quarters to shrink down a sweater so you can keep the hamster nice and toasty when he's doing his exercise. Love that one.
See, they worked out exactly how many quarters you would need to run the dryer for 200 years.
Yeah, I read that. No, there's so many great puzzles here. I like the vinegar one that you talked about.
Yeah, it's very clever. Getting the hamster back in time by putting it in the cold store in the presents.
Yes,
and then
the freezer, yeah.
Then you need to put it in the microwave in the future, which is a cool back, obviously, to Maniac Mansion.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so many great puzzles, and I like the I don't know why, because it's quite simple, but I like the fashion contest or whatever you want to call it.
The human show is my favorite. Yeah,
yeah, that was pretty good as well. But I like every puzzle here. There's for my money, this is an example of beautiful puzzle design. This game, you have the restricted space, so the exploration is more about it's not about exploring space, it's exploring the room for puzzles, the puzzle solving room.
Yeah,
instead, I love that. It's really well done.
So what do you think about the structure of the game? Because obviously when you solve, really what you're trying to do for four-fifths, three-quarters of the game is to reunite the three of them.
Yeah,
aren't you? Really, that's it. Because the experiment to send them back 24 hours has gone wrong. Hoagie's in the past, he needs to get back to the present. Laverne is in the future, she needs to get to the present. And really, that's what you're doing. And obviously all the constructs and all the puzzles that comes up with as to how you do that. But really, then you get them all back together in the present, and then it's back as you were. You got to go back to the day before. So that, as a kind of structure of a story, do you think that works?
So I didn't consider that. Yes, I definitely think the story works. But you're right. I mean, the main story, if you pick out the little hiccup about going time traveling, then the main story is really, really short. But that the time traveling is about, that's what this is all about. So
any sequences as well that involve Purple Tentacle, which I think is absolutely hilarious.
Mm.
Purple Tentacle's sole aim here is to shrink the humans down because he feels inadequate.
Yes.
To the size of the humans.
Yep.
So he's trying to create this ray gun, isn't he, which shrinks the humans to about the size of a mouse. And obviously then you get a puzzle in towards the end of the game where you need to be shrunk to get through a mouse hole to get into an adjacent room.
Mm.
And like all of these stories in adventure games, it kind of feels all a bit rushed at the end.
Yes, I was just about to say that the only part of the story that I feel was not fleshed out enough was the ending. The ending, if you know what you're doing, it's 3 minutes. And if you don't know what you're doing, it's still, I mean, you can't spend more than 15, 20 minutes on that. You'll figure out what to do because there's so little left to do at that point. Yeah. So that was, I remember from back in the day as well, that was slightly disappointing, the ending. But there's so much to love here that I love the game anyway.
I mean, Monkey 1 and 2 suffers from the same thing though, doesn't it, as well? Both of them, I think.
Yeah, true.
Slightly undercooked endings, particularly Monkey 1, where you just have to pick up root beer and use root beer on Ghost Pirate. So it must be difficult to it, because these are not action games. So how do you kind of end these stories without having some kind of climactic action sequence, boss battle, but in a puzzle environment? So it must be a difficult thing to do.
Yes, indeed. So maybe before we get too far off from the puzzles, let's hear from Riz, because he actually didn't get part of the statue puzzle as well, but you'll hear that in his clip.
Hello, everybody. This is Reese, a.k.a. King Kong Griever, here to you to talk to you this month about Day of the Tentacle. So, first off, I'm not the biggest fan of point-and-click adventures because I don't like the click-on-everything-to-make-everything-else-work way in which sometimes it works. I've played two in my life. I've played Secret of Monkey Island, and I have played Indiana Jones and The Fate of Atlantis. Both of those I had to resort to use a guide. And whilst I enjoyed the story of both of those games, it did get a bit tricky towards the end and figuring things out from gameplay. So I much enjoy watching people play than playing myself. Day of the Tentacle may be my favourite. I haven't decided if I prefer it to Secret of Monkey Island, the original. It's very, very accessible. I didn't use a guide. So for context, I did stream this game over the course of a month. And whilst there were people who were in the stream, people like Mads and John B, who probably completed the game, there were other people who were experiencing it the same time that I was. So people were coming up with ideas, and it was quite fun, and it was quite a community-driven solution with people like Manson and John V only providing help when absolutely necessary, and even then just kind of pointing in the direction. The puzzles all were relatively logical. I mean, in the context of the game, you know, with the time travel mechanics, so for example, rewriting the American Constitution so that every home has a vacuum cleaner because you need a vacuum cleaner in the future makes complete and utter sense. It just does. The times that I struggled were generally with the overthinking things. Like, there was one puzzle where I had to get rid of a nurse from a room, and the way in which you do it is by pushing her out of the room, and that's it. It makes complete and utter sense. But yeah, I would overthink things like that. As a general, I played with the newer graphics, much to the chagrin of certain people who probably listen to this, because I don't have the nostalgia for it. But I like the new graphics. I like the fact that it's not text-based and every character is voiced. And yeah, a great, great game. So really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed this month, actually. Great story, great gameplay, nice and accessible. Great graphics, and yeah, quite funny and very clever. So yeah, overall, big fan.
So thank you, Reese. That's great, mate. King Kong Groover there. I think echoing maybe some of the things that we've been talking about, both good and yeah, maybe nitpicky a little bit with some of this stuff. But the one thing that I did really enjoy, Mads, particularly in the present, was some of these side characters and how you deal with them.
Yeah.
Like the novelty salesman guy, or the guy who's at the convention in the present in the basement.
Yep.
He's not in the basement, he's on the ground floor, the hall there. Mm. And you have to get the exploding cigar from him, and
yes,
just the chattering teeth there as well. But again, the animation there when you put the cigar in his mouth and it explodes Bernard's head.
Yes, that's pure Tiny Toons, isn't it? I mean, it's
classic.
Really, really classic, well done. Car. Actually, yeah. It's something that will probably happen to you quite early on in the game. So it's a situation where you'd go, oh, can I die in this game? And then his head just pops back up from his shirt. So
yeah. Yeah, echoes of Monkey, isn't it, where he falls off the cliff.
Yes,
and you
exactly.
Think, oh, God, have I killed him? It's like, no, yeah. No, you haven't, yeah. Don't worry. And the guy, I've mentioned it briefly, but the depressed guy who's sitting in his room and you have to get that letter from the past sent through to Bernard. Oh, I tell you what I did do. For the longest time, I thought that you had to walk to and from the Chronojohn to deliver items to each of the other characters.
So funny thing. I'm stupid, so I'd always do that because it felt right. But I know you can just drop it on the character portraits.
What? So you know that you can, you know that you don't need to walk back and forth to the Chronicle, but you do it anyway?
Yeah, I know I'm weird that way, but I haven't sent a single piece between the characters using the portraits. I would put it down, flush it down the crown gem.
Oh, God. That is nuts.
No, but I mean, maybe it's because I knew all of the puzzles. So I'll just go there when I knew, okay, now I have this and this and this. Actually, whenever I was at the Chronodion, I would have them all three at the Chronodion, and they would just be exchanging stuff like there's no tomorrow, because I knew, okay, you need this, he needs that one. And so so I'd walk there, yes.
So for, I reckon for 80% of this game, I didn't realize that you could just click on a use something on a portrait and it would be delivered to that character.
Mm.
I was walking back and forth to the Chronogon.
Yep.
Not all characters can go through the Chronogon, of course. You can't put the hamster in the Chronogon.
No living things in the Chronogon. No.
Or nothing that won't fit. So some of the things are too big.
Oh, okay. Well. I don't think I've tried anything that's too big.
So the roller skates is one that comes to mind straight away. Laverne finds roller skates, and I was trying to.
She needs the roller skates, of course, for the mummy.
Of course, she does. Yeah. But when you're trying to look for solutions to some of these things, it helps. In some ways, there's a bit of gate in there because you can't. It's not an infinite amount of available items that you may have available to you. What do you think about the music?
I loved it. I mean, for me. As I said, this was when I got my Sound Blaster card, and it sounded really, really good. But playing this with an AVE or 32, for example, with a proper MIDI bank, it's a great soundtrack. And it still sounds just as good today, I think. The remastered version of the music is actually really pretty as well. They got a proper not reimagining, but re-recording of it all.
Yeah.
And it's really, really well done. But yeah, I love the music, and especially I love the sound design. I mean, this is a cartoon. You feel like you're playing a cartoon with all of those little sound effects that well, you'd be used to seeing on a Warner Bros. Cartoon, for example.
Yeah.
And it's really done well. Even in the floppy disk version, it has all of these sound effects. I don't remember any of them being missing. So that's really good.
Yeah. I was disappointed with the music.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Oh,
I love it. But maybe that could definitely be rose-tinted spectacles for me because I love this game so much. So as soon as that music starts, all the neurons start firing in my brain. So I'm just in my happy place.
See, I looked at this and said, right, it's McConnell, Bajakian, and Land, the dream team, the dream trio who made all that amazing music for the Monkey Games, and Clint Bajakian worked on Dark Forces, and I was thinking, right, I'm going to be playing this soundtrack on YouTube, and it just didn't. The music did not work. The worst thing I can say about it is that I barely noticed it.
Okay.
And I don't know whether it was a mixing thing or, I mean, over the speech, I barely ever noticed the music.
Okay.
Which is
funny,
a shame, because I love music and games and love listening to video game music outside of playing games.
And I think I'm probably the kind of guy who I like good music in games as well, but I get so focused. So 90% of the time, I won't actually hear the music unless it's annoying. And this would never annoy me. And whenever I did actually listen to it, I really appreciated it. But I normally actually totally blank out the music unless it's really annoying.
Nostalgia definitely has something to do with this as well. Like I've been humming the music from the first two Monkey Games in particular for forever.
Yeah.
But I've been listening to them in the games forever as well. So there is definitely something in that.
In the remaster,
the music, I did notice it more and appreciated it more there.
Yeah.
But I still didn't really like the cartoony compositional style, I think. It just didn't really work for me.
But it fits the aesthetics so brilliantly.
It does.
So
it does.
It is, you are playing a cartoon here, and a very zany one at that. And I loved that.
Maybe that's where I'm struggling with it. Maybe just the cartoon aesthetic didn't really work for me as well as it does for some people.
Okay. Yeah, could be. So I was most definitely completely 100% into that from the very first frame. So I loved the aesthetic.
So you prefer this to the Monkey Games, do you?
Graphically?
Yeah, just generally.
That's a tough question. You're asking me to choose between one of my kids, mate. I would actually say yes. I find the puzzle design is better. I like the story, and I love the whole splitting up between time zones and solving puzzles like that. So yes, as a puzzle game, yes. As a story that I love, maybe I do. That's tough. Maybe I can't put it above Monkey Island 1, The Secret of Monkey Island, but I can definitely put it at the same spot.
Yeah. See, I've been racking my brains over the past couple of weeks trying to work out kind of where's the disconnect? Why don't I absolutely adore this game? I think it's really, really good. I think everyone who likes point-and-click adventures should play it. But then I was thinking about Monkey and thinking, we did talk a little bit about this on the Monkey Island episode. Like, there's a naughtiness to Monkey Island. Like, it's a lightning in a bottle, I think, that Ron Gilbert captured in those first two games. There is a general sense of, I don't want to say danger, like mischief in the writing and in some of the things that you do, which didn't feel like it was intended. It was almost subconsciously Ron Gilbert, almost a little bit of himself, perhaps, and I don't know the fella, but it feels like there was a little bit of himself went into those games. They obviously are produced, but there is there's a soul to those games that I'm not sure has ever been captured quite in the same way, in my opinion, in any game since. With Day of the Tentacle, as incredible as it is, and these guys producing a game for the first time in a director role, it is incredible. It just feels like they were trying to not copy what Ron had done, but in bringing together something which is so very produced and polished and brilliantly designed, there's just a missing sense of mischief. Down-to-earthness, melancholy. I don't know. There's something there that just doesn't feel like it made it. And for me, that keeps it on that. I would put this at the same level as Curse of Monkey Island. Like, it's in that, for me, you've got Monkeys 1 and 2, and then there's a whole raft of games on the second level, and I think, for me, that sits there.
Okay. Yeah, well, I don't agree, but probably it's we were talking rose tinted spectacles here again, because I played it back in the day, and I definitely put this just as high as the Monkey games, even in the storytelling. I love the characters here; they are really well fleshed out and funny. But I do prefer Guybrush to these guys, I have to say. Yeah. But the puzzle design, even though I do think Monkey Island, especially The Secret of Monkey Island, is a great example of good puzzle design. The puzzle design is leagues ahead in Day of the Tentacle for me. So, and that is 50% of point-and-click adventures, isn't it? I mean, the 50% for me is the joy of solving the puzzles, and 50% is following a good story that you're interested in.
Yeah.
So,
you're not the only one. Adventure Gamers, the well-respected adventure game website, they voted it, and I don't know when this was, but they did a top 20 adventure games of all time and voted it number one.
Okay.
They obviously know what they're talking about, and if you were to Google almost any list of top 100 games of all time, this is in there somewhere, depending on who's writing that list.
It's a beauty. It's a beauty, but it's also a game that can sometimes be quite hard to get running.
Yes.
So let's listen to Kit, because he had some real problems playing this game.
Sure did.
Hey guys, it's Mark, aka Kit, from the Discord. Thought I'd give my 2 cents and my experience with Day of the Tentacle this month. I've never played a game like this, unless you want to call Tex Murphy last year. It's kind of like this, I feel like, but an actual proper LucasArts game I've never actually played. So I had to give this one a try. I have a close friend of mine who told me I really need to try this game. And here we are, finally had an excuse to fire it up. How are the puzzles? Well, the first puzzle for me was getting this game to work on a computer that I have. I have the original game in box. It was actually brand new, and I've been wanting to open it up and have an excuse to play it. And here we are. There's been a couple times it popped up mentioning for the game club, but this was the month that Mads put the hammer down and just said, we're playing Day of the Tentacle. So I went as far as pulling out an old 386 computer after I couldn't get it to run properly on my Pentium 3 or my Pentium 1. I just had sound card issues on both of them, or the game would freeze. I thought, oh, I've got a 386 Sound Blaster 16, piece of cake. Should run it absolutely perfect. Absolutely not. Would not run all the different settings. Anyway, that was the hardest puzzle. What did I do? I remembered I have an old Presario stock Pentium. I think it's a 120. And yeah, plugged that CD in and it just worked right out of the box. I think I had to change the IRQ or something. Anyway, that was the hardest puzzle. Took me 2.5-ish weeks to get going, but this game was awesome. I really enjoyed it. I loved the cartoon. And when I got it almost working, except with voices, my friend locally here, he was like, oh man, you got to play with the voices. I think it's the best part. And I kept thinking, man, the voices have got to be terrible, but it was great. I mean, obviously it was cheesy, but it was so good. I absolutely loved the puzzles. Some of them were hard. I had to use a walkthrough on certain things. There's no way I could have beaten this game in 2 weeks with the amount of time I had. As a kid, maybe. And, you know, that's the thing. I think going back, if I would have had this game, you know, way back in the day when I was younger and would have, you know, you could have just explored and explored and explored and finally figured things out. There were some puzzles I thought were a little janky, but honestly, this game's brilliant. Absolutely had a great time. I guess I need to play Monkey Island, maybe. I was really hoping to fire up the original Maniac Mansion. I have that on the C64, and I haven't fired that up. Now that I've beaten this, I think that's going to be next for me. But yeah, I definitely need to get more into these puzzle games. So anyway, a lot of fun. Enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.
So that was Kit or Mark. Thanks a lot for your clip, mate. Sorry you had to spend 2.5 weeks actually getting the game to run, but I'm well impressed that you actually finished it without using a guide for too much for too many of the puzzles. So you really must have been busy those last couple of days. But I'm glad you enjoyed it, even being a non-adventure game aficionado. So that's good. So, mate, where are we? Is there anything we need to say about Day of the Tentacle, apart from the fact that it's the best point-and-click adventure game ever made?
It gets a very, very, very well-endorsed, high recommend from me. I think everybody who likes adventure games should play it. I don't think it's the greatest of all time. It's not my favorite.
I would actually say everybody who are not familiar with point-and-click adventure games should play this, because this is the perfect example of the genre that's not going to kick dirt in your face immediately like Monkey Island would do. If, as a new player, newcomer to adventure games, you pick up Monkey Island 1 or 2, you will most likely go away disappointed because it's too tough, you can't figure out the puzzles and so on and so forth. Whereas this, it holds your hand, it feels modern to this day, to me at least, even though it's almost 30 years old. It feels modern in its design, and the whole fact about it being so condensed but only split up in time, it just makes the whole puzzle dynamic so much more manageable. And a testament to that is how many of our listeners who never played the game before actually finished it this month.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the puzzles are solvable without a guide.
Yes.
I mean, if you are patient and you take good notes when you're talking to people, all the puzzles are signposted. There aren't any that are obscure, in my opinion.
There's one puzzle that I stumbled on back in the day. I of course, remembered it this time. I remember being angry when I finally closed the door and found the bloody keys for the car. But apart from that one puzzle, I would say it's perfect puzzle design.
After Monkey 2 and the note on the laundry ticket on the back of the door, the first thing I do in an adventure game when I walk into a room is try and close the door.
Close all the doors. That's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true. But in Monkey Island, just to put a pin in that, in Monkey Island 2, you actually want to close the door because you know that you're going to be doing something that the Lago isn't supposed to see. So there's an incitement? Is that how you say it?
Yeah. An incentive.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, quite right.
Hmm.
So next, mate, we've already announced
We accidentally announced that the winner is Welsh Hairy Bastard.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, but, and that's our April game. Yes. It is to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the beloved, the one and only ZX Spectrum.
Yes, I'm really glad that we got some Specky games to play, because I haven't brought my +2 out in a long time, so that'll be good. And of course, I already finished the game, so I win April. We can just stop that discussion right here.
But it did WHB did tie in the vote with movie.
Yes,
after
it did.
The 126 votes, there were 45 each for movie and WHB. So now you have to play movie, mate.
I'm actually not going to play movie right now, because I finished it so quickly and I loved that puzzle game. So I will pick up Bob's other game, that's the sequel to WHB, yeah, which is X equals Y equals Z.
Yeah. Fair enough.
So I'll be playing
through
that.
There we go.
And,
so that's cool.
I'm sure that's manageable as well. And I will be completely sucked in like I was with the WHB. So after that, yeah, I may have a look at the movie.
Yeah, you ought to. Looks good.
It does. Looks it does good. Indeed.
So there we go. That's what we're going to be doing in April. Come and see us on Discord to join in the fun and the chat and the frustration and the joy of playing through what is, from the limited stuff I've seen of it so far, a great, great Specky puzzle game.
Mm.
I think that's about it, mate.
That's it. So, Chris, where can people find us?
They can find us at www.retroasylum.com. Go and see our beautiful site that our good friend, listener, Discord member, patron, Deadlock.
Yep.
Martin has designed for us. I've been using it because I'm still listening to some of the back episodes I've not listened to. It's much, much easier to find stuff. You'll be glad to know. It's a great site.
And that's
on Twitter at The Retro Asylum.
Our Twitter, our Facebook, our Instagram, and our Patreon site. So just go to that site. You'll find everything you need.
Yeah, and Discord, the link is on the website.
Yes.
If you want to come and join our Discord, like 900 other people have. That's a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
It remains my favorite place on the internet.
Indeed.
There we go.
Any shout-outs, mate?
To the guys, of course, and to just a couple of shout-outs to other Day of the Tentacle podcasts. Have a listen to Watch Out for Fireballs. They did a great episode on Day of the Tentacle, which includes a mini episode on Maniac Mansion,
okay,
which is also playable in full within Day of the Tentacle,
yeah,
which I'm sure everyone has realized. But that is a great episode. And also Dev Game Club did a 3-part series on Day of the Tentacle, which is also a brilliant listen, because both of those guys worked at LucasArts a little bit after Day of the Tentacle shipped.
And you told me that
they got some great insights.
Retronauts had an episode where they interview Tim Schafer and Dave Grossman
at the same time. Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the Retronauts live episodes from about 2009.
Mm. And of course, really people should go check out the Double Fine's YouTube page, where you can find, for example, the playthrough where Dave and Tim spends 3 hours playing through the entire game and talking about it. It's a great thing to have running in the background while you do something else.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, other than that, mate, I'm all good and looking forward to speaking again in April.
Yeah, me too. And let me just pluck the fabled show notes, because this time I'm going to try to remember to add a link to that YouTube video I just talked about to the show notes. Or actually, I'm not going to be adding it, but I'm going to try to remember to tell Dean to add it. So see, guys, there's show notes. So when Chris says we'll add that to the show notes, it is actually possible. So go to the website, check that out.
Well, there we go, mate. We'll speak again for WHB later this month.
Yes, looking forward to it.